Welcome to another episode of the Bharatvartha podcast. Today we have Alok Kumar and Kaushik Vishwanathan to talk about the exciting developments in space research in India. Alok is an associate professor at the Indian Institute of Science, Bangalore. He has worked with many teams exploring applications of science to make space exploration easier. Kaushik is also an assistant professor at IISc with an interest in advanced manufacturing and finishing processes. He has also worked with Alok on many different projects regarding space exploration. So yeah, welcome Alok and Kaushik. Thank you so much for making the time.
Sure. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much for having us here.
Yeah, so Alok and Kaushik, to begin things, I would love to understand, you know, how you guys got started in space research and so on, right? So maybe Alok, you could give a little bit of background and then Kaushik can add.
Sure. So one of the things was when I returned back to India, I was earlier a professor in Canada. I was an assistant professor at the University of Alberta. And when I was coming back, I had to ask myself as to, will I keep doing exactly what I was doing in Canada or would I change my focus a little bit? And at that time, one of the most exciting things happening in India was this change into the human space program. And I thought that's exciting. That deserves some work from our side also. So it was lucky that because I was in Bangalore, I was able to connect to some of the people at ISRO. And I realized that there is quite a bit of excitement at their end also. But there's a lot of open-ended questions about what are the things that need to be done for the human space program, human colonization, how India will. Obviously, US and some of the other countries are charting out their own path at that time. That's when we got started, and I posed one of these ideas about looking at making, you know, simple bricks on the moon as one of the projects. And luckily, there was another mad guy at the other end who was willing to work with me on this. And we got a small amount of money back in 2018, I believe, to look into that. And I think that's where we got started. At that time, Kaushik had just about joined, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. So for me, it was a little different, actually. So I didn't really have any significant plans to do anything space related. So when I came back to India, I had this view of ISRO. I don't think that's changed much, but I had a view of ISRO as being a very opaque organization, absolutely no way to enter and no one to talk to. I mean, even if you are an IISc, you get to speak to someone, but then it's always, you know, okay, there's some discussion, it really goes nowhere and so on. So I never really pursued it. I had my own thing and I was doing my own stuff. And then I think when Alok and I, we have several other interests that are common, and we started chatting about other things, we were discussing about other things, and then this brick stuff was going on, it was starting to catch up that time. We had I think he had a grant from 2018, is it, Alok, 2018?
Yeah, 2018 I got the grant, yeah.
And it wasn't a big grant, it was just something to get started with, and he was doing this stuff, and then he had his collaborator, and we had a chat, and we were just talking about some random things, and then suddenly there was this thought about, why don't we do this big stuff on the moon? Then we were thinking, you know, what is going, you know, what, this is bizarre, right? Sounds really bizarre. And then slowly we started thinking, okay, what are the steps to do that, to get there? First, we obviously have to do some stuff that shows that it's possible, and that's already being done. I think by the time some results started to come out. And then the next step would be, okay, can we first take a small baby step and go to low Earth orbit? And can we do some simple experiments in low Earth orbit? Can we run something there, you know, the same bacteria, do something that's automated, try it out, and then maybe see if that can be made more sophisticated, and then get out of low Earth orbit, get onto a program that's actually going to the moon and so on. So we started thinking in terms of these steps. And I think at that point, things started changing in ISRO a little bit. And they actually had a couple of calls for the Gaganyaan program for projects. And so suddenly people started listening to these ideas, and they were a little bit more receptive, and I was very surprised. And then this, I think some of this microgravity work also started, and then it was basically started as a very small sort of dabbling in the backyard type of project, Alok, me, and we had a couple of interns, I think, if you remember, in 2019. And so it started there. It was very humble and very sort of basic looking prototypes were being put together, and then slowly we started steadying things and consolidating things and so on. And then it became a little bit more complicated. More people joined in. More people from ISRO were interested. And then slowly things started mushrooming from there. So I think it was a little bit organic from my side. It wasn't exactly something that I had planned to do.
Right. Sounds pretty interesting. I mean, you know, from a layperson's perspective, when you say making bricks using lunar soil or whatever, it's literally making bricks? Or, I mean, is there, you know, some larger significance to this that, you know, we are perhaps missing, Kaushik?
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, it's just literally making bricks. Like, I don't think there is any hidden agenda behind this. But I think one of the challenges is, as I'm sure Alok will, you know, talk about this a little bit more in detail, is, okay, you decide you want to make bricks, you want to make settlements, right? That's okay. First, the intent is that. But what do you do to make that happen? Obviously, you're not going to carry a lorry of concrete from somewhere to go and make that happen, right? So you need to be frugal in your effort, and you need to make efforts towards finding processes that are minimal footprint, but can at the same time produce stuff that is strong enough. You obviously don't want things to collapse under the numbers, even though the weight is lower. You have to make sure that some of these minimum standards are met. And so that's actually not as trivial as it sounds, because, you know, you go on the street, they are making bricks, that's very simple. People have been making bricks for thousands of years, right? So why are you wasting? But it's actually not that trivial, as we discovered.
No, it was not trivial at all, right? I mean, this is the brick, the whole idea of the brick was, it's a building block, right? You want to make a Taj Mahal or a palace on the moon. Where do you start, right? And in that sense, the brick is signifies the first baby step. Was the whole idea. And as Kaushik said, I don't think there is much of a bigger sinister background to that or anything.
No, but as you mentioned, I think it's something very fundamental. And if we are looking at, you know, I don't know, some kind of colonization in the 2030s or 2040s or whatever, these kind of things would become integral, right? You know, on that note, you know, Alok, can you just catch us up on all of the latest developments that have been happening on the ground with respect to space research in India?
I mean, that would be a very big ground. Yeah. I don't think I can, I should be commenting on all the different work, all the things that are going on there. But I think, when we announced the idea of wanting to send astronauts onto low Earth orbits or to space, or maybe even to the moon and later on to the Mars, I think that was a big departure for us, for at least ISRO, with regards to how it views itself in the future, right? So that itself has gotten a lot of people interested in figuring out different aspects of it. I mean, I would say there's a whole multitude of problems now with sending a human being onto Mars or even the moon or even the low Earth orbit, even, because that's something that India has not tackled for this long. So there is now, I think, a very large group of people, scientists and outside and inside of ISRO working on it. Obviously, I'm not qualified to comment on the entirety of what's going on. But with a small team here, with like-minded people like Kaushik and a couple of others, we are trying to do our own bit. I think we are tracking some of the more futuristic aspects here with the brick making and the colony part. But I'm sure there are other people here as well. But the whole idea of sending, this is a huge step for India, for trying to put somebody there, because the technological requirements now are stupendously high and very different from what ISRO has been accustomed to.
Right. And, you know, when you undertake such an effort, right, I mean, it's always a proxy for multiple things, right? Multiple developments that happen along many different axes to enable that one particular thing. You know, Kaushik, you briefly mentioned, right, I mean, that, you know, ISRO being open to certain ideas and so on, right? And obviously, you know, we are also seeing in the news that, you know, they're working with startups, for example. There was the Indian Space Association that was formed, etc. There seems to be a lot more outreach, you know, from a space perspective, and so on, right? What do you think has changed from a policy perspective? I mean, do you think anything has changed on that front? I mean, that enables this, you know, sudden, I won't say sudden, but this recent outreach and so on?
I think the one big thing has been privatization. I mean, I know a lot of old school guys, even in my family and so on, are completely loathe about privatization. They believe it's, you know, anathema, cannot be done. But I'll tell you, you know, very simple example, privatization of space and privatization of defense, right? The degree to which they've had an impact, or they will have an impact, let's say 10 years down the line, is just immense. I can cite several examples, but I think it'll be too controversial if I do that right now. For defense, right? And space is no different. The moment you have some competition and you have more routes to access, for example, you know, just look at what SpaceX has done in terms of enabling satellites to get into low Earth orbit. It's a complete revolution. There's absolutely no denying that. Right? I mean, earlier in the 70s, 80s, the only source for rockets that you had was the government in some sense. And that single bottleneck has just been broken apart. And people know that it can be done. SpaceX can do it. I'm sure other big conglomerates can do it. You know, Virgin is trying, and there are lots of people now who are trying to put their money. Jeff Bezos, of course, has come in. So people know that it's possible. And people know that once the policy preventing you from doing it is put in place, the sky is the limit, if you pardon the pun, right? You can go and try these things. And the same applies also to defense in some sense. I think it's a related question. That was, I think, one of the biggest advantages that the US and the UK had from the 40s. That, Alok and I have had discussions over this for a long time. The fact that they had these private players, General Dynamics and so on at that point, really enabled them to take the lead, not just in defense equipment, but also in general technology. And you see that right to this day, we're always playing catch up in some sense, we're still struggling to, because there is nothing, like we've said before, for technology to develop, there's nothing better than war, right? And or nothing better than people wanting to get an upper hand, because they're scrambling to do whatever it takes.
Or even a Cold War.
Or even a Cold War, right? Yeah, exactly. Right. Hot or cold, yeah. So people are scrambling to get ahead of each other. And that's the best way in which technology develops, unfortunately, right? And that's the best way. So yeah, I think privatization has been the biggest game changer.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're living in this whole space age 2.0, right? I mean, as some people call it, we have the billionaires of the world striving to, make a difference, right? Whether it's Elon Musk with SpaceX, Jeff Bezos with Blue Origin, or even Virgin as well, right? I mean, they're also doing a fair bit of work on that front. You know, where are we with respect to, whatever's happening in terms of the new space age that we're seeing, Alok?
Well, I mean, 1969, Americans put a man on the moon. We haven't been able to do that yet. We are quite behind in some sense. It's also true that in this new space age, we have new opportunities, new technologies that are replacing many of the older ones. One of them being the microfluidics that me and Kaushik are working on at the lab on a chip. Payloads and all that. We did lose out at least India did lose out on quite a bit of opportunity back then. I mean, Rakesh Sharma did go to space, but he just went on a Russian vehicle and then came back. And we were not able to really take advantage of all that experience in building up any capacity here. But then if you look at it, I mean, the whole story is quite lopsided because there's still only a couple of countries which have, maybe three countries which have the capacity to send astronauts to space, three, four. If you take European Union together, it's another thing. But as technologies are changing, we are everybody is now going to be looking at astronauts staying on, let's say, moon or for longer and longer durations, and that's going to be challenging. That's going to require a whole set of new technologies, and I think that's where the opening comes for new players. So in that sense, in the human space program, India is actually a new player. It's a totally novice. There, I think there's the opportunity comes in where you have a lot of new technologies coming up. Kaushik and I have been working on this payload for quite some time, and I think we have had quite a bit of fun doing it, but at the same time, it does drive the envelope of technology in the country a little bit further ahead in that sense.
Right. Kaushik, you mentioned, privatization, right? I mean, we've seen this whole Indian Space Association as well that was launched in late 2021 by the Prime Minister. But we're also seeing a lot of startup action as well, right? I mean, you have Pixel, Agnikul, Skyroot. What is your view on all of that innovation that's happening?
By the way, I've been telling Kaushik that we should leave our jobs and do a startup.
Well, sooner than later, I suppose, and hopefully we'll be discussing your innovation on another podcast. Whenever you decide to start up, yeah, Kaushik.
Yeah, I think it's great. Right? There's nothing better than competition. I think India's startup scene was very different maybe 5-6 years ago before this sudden space boom has come up, right? And many of these startups, and I think to some degree that's also true right now, are all app-based startups in some sense, and so that. Then, many of them are very clever. There's also fintech startups. So they're all very clever, run by clever people and so on. But their overheads are low. The development time scales are low. The number of iteration cycles for R&D is low, right, for them. So they're able to make money very quickly. Space is very different. And I think many of the startups also, at least, the ones you mentioned, they've had some interactions with them. And they've had trouble finding their feet. Right? They started up, they had to look around. Of course, COVID came in between and things happened. But it's great. I think this is probably the only way in which, you know, having multiple people competing is probably the only way in which we'll get good technology. Or there will be startups that will start and fail, there will be disaster stories, but that's all part of the entire journey. So it's really great.
What is the opportunity that, you know, one can look at? You know, a bunch of these folks are doing this imaging and, you know, high resolution imaging and you know, few folks have talked about mining and so on, right? Asteroid mining and so on, right? But any other opportunities from a business perspective that some of the startups can look at?
Kaushik, let's get ourselves as gold, man. We are also a bit clever.
Yeah, let gold and come back and sell it here. Gold prices are soaring, dude.
Like, yeah, I mean, exactly.
I mean, yeah, I'm not putting money in Bitcoin, but
gold, yeah, straight extraterrestrial gold. That's what we'll go for. But yeah, I think things like imaging, spectral imaging, are all immediate needs in some sense, right? Because like remote sensing, security, you know, weather monitoring, things like that are critical needs. So I think many of these startups have probably realized that that is something that will bring them returns in the short run. But I think something like space vehicles, for example, launch vehicles, that's a longer term investment. And I think that's not something that you can just start up and say, okay, we'll make it. There are lots of allied technologies that have to mature together. There has to be gas turbine technology. There has to be manufacturing technology that has to match it, for example. Right? So there are lots of things that have to come together. So I think having a spectrum of these things is good. It's one thing, but also having startups that are backed by bigger companies, both in terms of tech and in terms of money, guaranteeing that they'll be able to do stuff over the next 5 years and deliver things as promised is also important. So I don't know if that answers the question, but.
Right. How do you see the role of ISRO in all of this, right? I mean, you know, all the startups and so on, I mean, their time to sort of launch a satellite has come down, you know, drastically, right? And the ISRO is really helping them with the quality and all of those checks and balances that are required, right? Because also space research is not one of those things where you can fail fast, like a typical, you know, software startup or something like that, right? Alok, how do you see the role of ISRO in space research in India?
I think as time goes on, they have to really pivot more into the research part. I mean, till now they have been perfecting the art of making satellites and making these rockets, and they have done it very well. I guess as the space frontier expands, they really need to specialize a little bit more towards the fantasy world, in some sense, going for making missions for deep space, trying to do things which companies will not invest in, right? I mean, companies would want to dig gold on an asteroid, be a gold digger, but they would not want to put a telescope on the moon, right? So putting a telescope on the moon can have severe, massive advantages with respect to noise and with respect to some of the imageries that can be captured. And there's quite a few people who are already thinking about it. So that's something that a private player will never capture. And that's where I think ISRO needs to focus on. And I mean, that's where the research frontier would lie. So somebody like Kaushik is more interested in research. I've had more success convincing him of making the moon brick than trying to dig platinum or gold out of an asteroid. So I think ISRO also needs to think on that in that terms, that those are the frontiers of research. For example, I'll give you just one quick example. Mars, it probably had water at some point, right? Liquid water, but it does not represent a very habitable climate. But at the same time, it's not impossible that it was inhabited by very simple organisms at some point. But now that if you do go there, is it possible to, you know, maybe grow the potatoes like in the Martian? Is it going to be possible? That it represents an extreme climate, an extreme from the Earth. Its soil is very different. Its atmosphere is very different. Its atmosphere is very thin compared to Earth. It has a whole lot of carbon dioxide. That's where some of the research frontier lies. And that's where I think I'm nobody to advise ISRO, but if they were listening in here, Roshan, maybe you would want to send them a clip. They should be pivoting more towards that, I'd say.
Right.
Well, just remove the controversial bits in your
sending. No controversies.
Well, I mean, since you bring up Mars and colonization, I mean, I have to ask the obvious question, right? I mean, when do you guys think that, you know, it will be possible for us to colonize Mars? And how will that even happen? You know, for a layperson, right? How should one picture this? I mean, will we send out, like, you know, armadas of people from here, and you know, will they start a new society? How will this whole thing happen?
Kaushik? Hey, on that thing, I actually sent Kaushik a screenshot of some tweet which said that our Mars break will be useful from late 2030s. And neither of us could understand whether it was sarcasm or commentary.
Yeah, why late 2030s? Are we running out of bricks? Are we running out of space? Like, what is going on, right? But clearly, somebody had a very clear prediction of when it will start happening.
Yeah. Neither of us have that good a prediction, I think, for Mars.
Yeah, maybe we should tell the guy our bricks, huh?
Yeah.
Nice, send it off there.
Like an advance contract or something, right?
Yeah. Invest.
No, but any thoughts on that? I mean, like, do you think that it could happen potentially in the next 10 years? And if so, you know, what form would it take?
I'm not sure. Actually, I think Alok will probably have a better answer to this, right? Because I still have this very vague notion that it's futuristic. I mean, somehow I don't see a clear plan right now. I think things will, see, we haven't gone to the moon for a while. Right. And NASA's obviously dropped all plans, and now it's all up to the private guys.
NASA hasn't dropped all plans. So there is I can't recollect the name of it. It's named after a Greek god or something. So there was a plan, and this
Artemis.
Yeah. So Artemis, I think originally they envisaged some 24 people by 2024 individuals who will be living there for some time. I don't know if they gave a clear timeline of how long they will live, but maybe a month or something. The Artemis, obviously, this was before it was announced or before the pandemic. So that has gotten pushed, but Artemis is still on. I mean, if you see the NASA feeds, they're still doing the tests, and they do have a crew, which is ready. I don't know all that. I just follow them on the tweet part. So on the Twitter feeds or the news feeds, but the Artemis program hasn't been shelved. It did, there were some setbacks. I don't remember exactly which setbacks were there, but pandemic was obviously one. You know, moon will happen much faster, obviously, than Mars. That's obviously going to happen. I mean, I would not be surprised if it happens. If you have long-term habitation on the moon before 2030s, not late 2030s, before 2030s.
Since you're talking about research and, you know, being ambitious about space and everything, right? I mean, there's often this trope that is, you know, that comes up whenever you talk about, you know, cutting edge tech like this, right? That, hey, you know, for a country that is, you know, as poor as us, should we be spending all of this money on space, or, you know, should it be on more prudent things like, you know, I don't know, agriculture or whatever else, right? But then obviously, you know, space research is as I mentioned, I mean, it's also the second degree, third degree innovation that happens as a result of space research is phenomenal, right? So what would you say to, you know, something like that, you know, Alok?
See, this comes up again and again, right? But we know that, I'll just give you a quick example of our own work. That's probably the easiest place to draw some inspiration from. So this brick that we are using, the Kaushik is pioneering the entire manufacturing aspect of it. What I bring to the table is the biotechnology aspect, where we have this bacteria, which sort of, it's a very natural, the bacteria is derived from the soil, and it's a very natural process that takes place. It's called biosedimentation, where the bacteria actually leads to the precipitation of calcium carbonate, along with it oozes out biopolymers that allow the soil particles to get bonded. Now, if you do the same process on Earth, let's say in water, which has a lot of lead poisoning. So what happens is, as the calcium carbonate precipitates, it actually takes down the lead with it. In fact, it's probably one of the ways in which you can actually filter natural water of lead contamination or heavy metal contamination. So we are looking into that. And I'm sure there are many other technologies that can come from this. I mean, if we could all convince Kaushik to be a gold digger, we could pay for all this space program. But I'm sure maybe Kaushik can think of a couple of more good examples.
I think this argument, like Alok said, you know, I've also heard it many times. I think there are two aspects to it. I would like to say, one is a more emotional aspect, which is, you know, which is a very, I mean, a very filmy aspect, right? If you don't have a means of survival, it doesn't mean you can't dream of doing big things, right? And I think that's important to keep dreams and aspirations alive, right? And it's not just alive because we want to do it or because we want to prove ourselves or anything, but alive because we have to stay relevant. I think we've all learned several new lessons from this entire Russia-Ukraine affair. And the sort of political consequences it can have, very quickly things can get, you know, you can get put into a corner in some sense, and things change overnight, right? That's one aspect of it, you know, the aspirational aspect. I think the second one, even economically, right, I'm often a little perplexed. I'm not an economist. I've not taken a course in economics or a master's degree in economics to be making justifiable statements. But if you have a budget for technology development, let's say space technology development, it's bound to have consequences that trickle down. And this is, we've seen this time and again from the 40s, 50s, from NASA's big space program, from the Cold War. There are so many examples, and we've seen them. Everybody has seen them, right? From the advent of television to internet, to everything. It just baffles me how somebody could come and say, don't do this stuff. Why don't you go and use that money elsewhere? I think the more equitable attitude should be, okay, you need X money in, you know, whatever is critical for common people's needs, which is obviously important, which is the main reason why governments make budgets and so on. But that doesn't mean that if you have excess of X, you transfer X by 2 from there and make this 3X by 2, right? I mean, that type of logic, I don't think, you know, I've always been baffled by that type of logic. I don't think there's any question. Everybody knows that space technology. Of course, there are times when you spend money, you know, public money, it has to be used responsibly by people who are doing research in space or otherwise. And that's an important mandate for people like us, right? For academicians who get grants from the government. It's our responsibility to use it to the best of our ability. And as long as that happens, there is bound to be something useful that comes out of it. There was an article, Roshan, I don't know if you've heard of it. Maybe we can forward it to him. Written by a Princeton professor, I forget his name. It was called The Importance, The Usefulness of Useless Research. So it was written in the 60s, I think, when similar types of arguments were being made in the US. And he had the whole list of things that, you know, basically showed how people, and I think he focused mostly on wartime research. People were saying, oh, why are they spending so much money on the war? Why did they have charities? You know, stuff like that. And he made out several clear examples that said that the reason you're enjoying X, Y, and Z today is because people spent all that money doing stuff. So I think it's important to figure it out.
Right. One of the key developments that have happened over the last decade or so is the Gaganyaan, right? It was ISRO's first Indian human spaceflight program as such. I think it started in 2007 or so. Can you, Alok, can you talk a little bit about the significance of this, you know, in the realm of space research in India?
Sure. So I think, I don't know when the original plans were laid out, but I believe it was after the 2014 elections that Gaganyaan was given political mandate to go ahead. In many senses, this is a totally new ground for ISRO. And this is what is going to be the game changer. Our interest in now putting humans into space, it's not just about that. It's about creating new paradigms in our research. Earlier, we excelled in some aspects, which is making satellites and making launch vehicles, and then we got stuck or saturated. Our research sort of saturated over there. But the next set of challenges that are going to come in, one of the things would be that space would actually also becoming a manufacturing center in some sense. There's a lot of different manufacturing, for example, 3D printing of tissues, making certain type of glasses and all that. That seem to be much more viable in the low Earth orbit than anywhere else. This is obviously apart from any advantages countries will accrue from, let's say, being able to go to the moon and mine some of the important metals maybe from that place. So the Gaganyaan program, I think, is just a stepping stone towards those. We should be focused on the longer term aspects, which is colonization, at least of the moon right now. That will also take quite some time, but we can focus on Mars in late 2030s. Our Mars bricks are ready. There's a huge lot of things for us, including challenges in manufacturing, including new manufacturing technologies that might come up, advances in biomedical research, plus obviously the whole prospect of being able to mine some of these heavy metals, some of these rare earth metals that are required. I mean, we are, as a nation, we don't have the kind of deposits, or at least they have not been excavated or looked into yet, let's say electric vehicle technology and all that. So in my opinion, it probably makes a far better sense and sustainable sense of mining it on the moon than mining on Earth, where we are causing massive ecological disaster through all the mining. But on the moon, we will not have to pay that kind of a cost. So it seems to be a win-win situation.
Are there any other advantages to having a moon base as such? I mean, does it facilitate any kind of a further exploration into space, or Any other advantages that you think of?
Totally. I mean, Moonbase is some of it. It might even benefit some of the astrophysical research by putting observatories on the moon. But if we are successful in trying to go towards the asteroid or Mars, Moon is likely going to be the first base, and then that is so. If you don't go there, you're not going anywhere else.
Coming to some of your work, right? You guys have worked on this whole biocementation processes.
Question: 1 second. Yeah. I just found the article I'm talking about. It's called the usefulness of useless knowledge.
Oh, okay.
In case your listeners are interested, it was written by a guy called Abraham Flex.
Right.
Not in the '50s; it was actually written in the '30s. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can find it.
We'll definitely link to it in the description. Yeah. Speaking of some of the work that you guys are doing on this whole biocementation processes and everything, right? Making bricks on Moon and Mars. Can you talk about it a little more? Technically, what are you guys doing? What are some of the challenges you're facing? And how are you sort of innovating to, if I understand correctly, how are you sort of 3D printing this sort of a brick or something?
But so there are multiple challenges. One is if you have to make anything in an environment on the moon, you are facing a circumstance that is vastly different from the Earth, including the fact that there's no atmosphere there, the gravity is different. But first and foremost, the soil or whatever materials that are available to you, the material resources that Moon provides, that colonize or trying to take steps, baby steps towards that, is to learn more about the material and understand how it is different or similar to Earth. For example, with the Martian soil, we realize so the lunar soil is quite rich in silicon dioxide. It's in some sense, if you view it, it's more like sand. Whereas the Martian soil, it's very rich in iron, and it actually can be, in some sense, poisonous to organisms because it does cause iron toxicity, etc. So to even get started, there's going to be so many different challenges, but the first step towards is to even understand it from a materials perspective. So when we looked at biocementation, one of the key points we wanted to understand is how is this material different from the sand or the clay that is available to us on the Earth? And I think that's where during our work, we found that they are very different, but at the same time, there are a lot of similarities also. Just as I said, some of the lunar soil is basically just sand. So this understanding is very important because these understandings will be relevant later when you do send, let's say, hopefully Chandrayaan 3 is very successful. So when the lander lands, this lunar dust actually comes up and actually goes and settles onto some of this, the electronics. As we learn more, we probably will also discover solutions to some of the other problems. So we'll see. But I think on the manufacturing side, Kaushik has come up with some very interesting ideas there.
Right.
Yeah. So the I think the core of the thing is to first have a process that consolidates loose sand in the form of something that can take a reasonable amount of strength. And the second step, of course, is to be able to make that on a slightly larger scale in a reproducible manner so that the first brick is not weaker than the third brick and they're all approximately the same. So I think we've been focusing on some of those things. So we've developed some type of casting standard. So it's again stuff that people we've been doing on Earth in different contexts, let's take our lab some of that to the situation. So that is the first. Now we're also exploring the possibility of directly 3D printing structures that are not just cylinders or bricks of conventional shapes, but also intricate structures into which you can put scaffolding, you can put internal support, you can put internal features and so on. So those are things that we are exploring right now. I think, as Alok mentioned, this there are multiple challenges in this. For example, even the 3D printing, a very simple challenge is you have this slurry basically that looks like cement, right, or concrete. Of that consistency that's flowing out, and then you have to get that to solidify and to set, and at the same time you don't want it setting fast enough because it will set inside the nozzle for which it's coming out, but you want it to set fast enough so that it doesn't come out, get deposited, and flow away, right? So simple questions like this are actually very important scientific problems that need some degree of experimental or some thinking. So those are the things I think that my side of the collaboration is probably focused on. Of course, Anuk and I, both of us have programs that go beyond the space work, but I think this is sort of
And, you know, when we talk about space research, there is a whole geopolitical angle to this as well, right? I mean, it's too vast and too wide to not do some of this stuff in collaboration with other countries and so on. So could you, you know, Alok, could you talk about some of the partnerships that we have with, let's say, NASA or, you know, some of the other, you know, space programs of other countries and so on?
I'm probably the wrong person to be speaking about the collaborations because, I mean, some of these collaborations that Israel has been doing, I am not part of that because those are usually done on an agency-to-agency basis. What we have done, I mean, for example, Chandrayaan 1, when we did send the orbiter, it carried instruments from different, I don't know how many countries, but at least the US, and it was the US mineralogy mapper which actually discovered water. So you see, it was such great collaboration that India sent its rocket and its orbiter, but on the orbiter, the payload which discovered was an American payload. So there's a lot of different things to be done. This, I think the ground to be covered is so huge that without collaboration, it probably won't work. But at the same time, space agencies, I'm sure, would also be looking into protecting their turf, no pun intended, when they get there. I think this some of the more the sciencey questions, I think the collaboration will be easier. But when it comes to actually putting your flag down and claiming some part of the land, that's where things are going to get a bit tricky. And that's where I think people will get very, they'll want their own space again. So it's going to be tricky. I don't think it's going to be an easy way forward, except for the very sciencey part. So there, I think people are happy collaborating. It's more of a routine and collaborations have happened quite a bit.
And for any domain or industry to develop, you need talent, right? I mean, give us a sense of, you know, the talent that India has on the space front. You know, are you seeing a lot more of the, you know, students or a lot more people applying to, you know, these kind of areas? Or, you know, what can we do to kind of develop this scientific temper and get people interested in space and also make it a viable sort of an occupation for people? Kaushik, you want to go?
Yeah, I think there's definitely an uptake in interest. Maybe part of it is also fueled by some of these startups and the fact that they've started, they've been so successful, raising a lot of money, and also some of them have started showing technology demonstrators as well. So that definitely is a magnet. I think also in terms of space science as a subject per se, for people to specialize in, that also has started coming up quite a bit. And, you know, for example, IAST, right, the ISRO's Institute in Trivandrum has, that's generated a lot of interest, lots of people going there with the intent of eventually going to. So of course, there are, you know, things in that program that can be changed, lots of people have lost comments and so on, but I think it's a very good start. So there is definitely an interest. I think it's important for us to capitalize at this point on that and to make sure that we tap into that pool without losing out. There's a possibility that we could lose out.
And finally, you know, to kind of end the podcast, if you were to look into the future, look, you know, what are like two or three things that make you really optimistic about space research in India?
So one of the things that the first and foremost thing I think is the reception of the general public. The general public is very receptive to it. I think there's a broad-based support for ISRO's ambitions and space efforts. So, I mean, although while we obviously have once in a while people come and question, I don't think the general public is that cynical or that skeptical of the value of space research at all. I think the general public understands and the value of this better than many of our experts, which sort of tend to question this. So I think that is number one. The other, I think, is I would say a startup. I mean, some of the problems, the only way we can move forward is, as we mentioned before, is to have a bit of a pivoting here where you allow private sector to come in and do things that we have already been very good at for quite some time and let them take up that space. And then ISRO can move into a little bit more of a specialized in the human space program, the colonization part, where the interest in from private agencies in India is still not that high, obviously. So that frontier, if they can take up, I think, and there seems to be a lot of youthful and a lot of private players have come into the market, especially into the satellite business. And as we discussed, hyperspectral imaging and all that. So I think that's a very, very good sign.
Amazing. Kaushik, any last thoughts from you? And, you know, how do you look at the future? I mean, if you were to sort of crystal gaze.
I think I'm optimistic. I think this sort of privatization has opened up a lot of possibilities, like I mentioned before. And I think that's something we have to capitalize on. If we continue in this mission mode business for too long without investing, let's say, in things that are not immediately beneficial, but things that will reap rewards, let's say 5 years, 10 years, and we already see that happening in multiple parts. And I think that gives me a lot of hope. I'm very optimistic. Again, we won't know, you know, how many of these things will play out until maybe 5 years later. I think that's because I think space and defense, both being critical sectors, right, are very similar in that sense. So yeah, I'm optimistic. Let's see.
Awesome.
Hopefully things will change very soon.
Awesome. So that's a fantastic note to end the podcast on. You know, thank you guys for, you know, really making the time and helping us understand a few of these things. At Bharatvarta, we try to bring, you know, positive perspectives about the country, and hearing about space development is certainly, you know, one of those things, right, that, you know, definitely makes us optimistic for the country's future. So thank you again for being on the podcast.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Roshan. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Bharatvarta podcast. If you want to see more content like this, then don't forget to subscribe to our channel. We started Bharatvarta to facilitate long-form discussions on politics, policy, and culture. We don't necessarily endorse anything that was said in this episode. If you wish to offer us feedback, do reach out to us on social media. We are at Bharatvarta on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You could also get in touch with us on our website, www.bharatvarta.in. The links are in the description below. Until next time, stay safe, take care, and Jai Hind.